You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Today, I'm super stoked to welcome Angelita Morio, who is not only Portland's youngest city council member, they're also a fierce social equity and justice advocate who is legitimately smashing doors open for an entire generation of U.S. immigrants with political, governmental, or social justice goals. Thank you for joining me today, Counselor.
That was awesome. I'm going to record that, play it in my ear when I'm feeling sad.
Hey, that's my new side hustle, like selling intros. So you are up for re-election, and you do have a stunning list of first-term accomplishments. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that you are already, your name is very much like etched into the history of our city. But rather than kind of unpacking your platform and your goals, I wanted more to talk about the path to the 2024 election that put you in your District 3 seat in the first place. Tell me about your experience of coming to the U.S. from Paraguay at such a young age. Like, how did that inform your path to leadership?
Yeah, that's a great question. Me, my mom, my sister, we moved to the U.S. when I was 4 years old, and we moved, and then right afterwards, 9/11 happened. So I think it was, you know, as immigrants, we had a very different experience than people who came right before 9/11. There was a lot of skepticism around anyone who was viewed as other, and obviously certain communities, especially the Muslim community, was targeted differently. But I think that growing up in Tempe, Arizona, was actually where we landed first, really sort of shaped your perspective around how people are treated, who is seen as valuable. And I didn't really have the language for any of that at that point. I wasn't politically adept, and I couldn't name some of the things that we were experiencing as an immigrant family. But there was a lot of, you know, my sister and I had to be extremely independent and resilient because my mom was a single mother. She was working full time taking care of us, and we had to really find ways to take care of one another as well. So there were a lot of times that I think community stepped up for us, like the church would give us clothes and help us with food boxes and that sort of thing. And I think that really informs how I approach community today. Mm-hmm. But I moved to Portland when I was in seventh grade. My mom got really sick of the weather in Arizona, and she Googled, what's the rainiest state? And we were here a month later.
Whoa, Arizona did all that.
Yeah.
That's a wild place to land, especially after 9/11, because Arizona is quite a conservative state.
Oh, yeah.
Did you experience, now I imagine that there's like a level of racism, xenophobia that happens in Portland, but were you primed for that in Arizona? Are you kind of too young to like take that in?
Well, I have a very different experience, I think, than my mother and my sister, because my I'm a little bit more white presenting than they are. I don't have a Spanish accent. My mom has black hair, black eyes, a very thick Spanish accent. And she's perfectly fluid in both languages. She actually speaks three languages because in Paraguay, you're taught more in school. But, not trying to drag you. I just mean, you know, people assume that someone with an accent is more ignorant in some ways. And I'm like, well, it actually means they speak more languages than you. But so I think like she's experienced some anti-immigrant sentiment. And at the same time, you know, I think in our own immigrant communities, it can be very complicated because there are people who feel like they did it, quote unquote, the right way versus the wrong way. And I don't believe in any of those silos. I think people just deserve to live and to be safe with their families wherever they are. And we also can't ignore the fact that part of the reason we left Paraguay was because it was in such disarray because we had a dictator for 30 years.
Right.
And part of the reason we had that dictator was because the United States helped to install him in order to help fight the spread of communism. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of that colors like how I view other people who come here. And it's like, well, now I'm an American and my country sometimes harms people abroad. And so what is our responsibility to take people in when we've done that to them?
Right. Right. So you get to Portland, what, seventh grade, was that like 13 years old?
12, yeah.
So you kind of already have this, this view, this worldview of how America does treat immigrants, especially immigrants who are kind of victims of the American foreign policy. You get to Portland, which is obviously a far different landscape than Tempe, yeah. Arizona, by most measures. I wonder how, if you're taking in how the city is run at that age, like how did you clock like how the city government was running in seventh grade? And was that like kind of informing your worldview already?
Politics and government, all of that was never really a part of a discussion in my family. For one thing, I think honestly, my mom was very busy working all of the time trying to support us. And for another thing, as immigrants, we were sort of raised to believe that you don't accept help from the government. You don't get in debt from like food stamp programs. You don't do any of that because if you do, it can set back your immigration paperwork. And so my mom was very against us accepting any government assistance, even if I think it would have helped us a lot, because she was very fearful that that would impact our documentation.
Right.
That's actually a myth. It doesn't impact your immigration status to take on SNAP and other food benefits and things like that. But I was very much raised with that mentality of like, the government is not here to help you handle it yourself as an immigrant family.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I worked in local government that I learned a lot about how it works and what it can do for the people. And then I had a very big shift in perspective about what I wanted government to become.
Right. Interesting. So it was a conversation, just not the conversation that I was imagining. Like you were having these governmental conversations about what it could do, but what it shouldn't do. These expectations around what might fall apart if you engage. Like it's still the conversation, like, I think that's an important point, the shift from the belief, like, feelings aren't facts kind of conversation, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of brings up, so I did a zine making workshop with the Lentz Youth Initiative this week.
I love that.
It was kids were between 14 and 17, and I was fascinated by how many of them saw a future for themselves in, like, nonprofit work, social justice work, government, etc. Because I feel like we're really being force-fed this narrative that kids in this bracket are like illiterate TikTok zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very heartened by their commitment to like their community, but also like their neighborhoods. And I thought of you because you are the youngest counselor in the history of Portland. And in thinking of you, I also had like that, I had like a dope perspective shift because like, obviously, young adults and teens being community-minded and driven toward government work, that's not novel, that's not a new idea. But I did, like, low-key have, like, this Whitney Houston moment of, like, oh my god, the children are our future. Oh my gosh. I legit felt like I was seeing your impact. I was seeing your visibility through them. And I saw you making their dreams more tangible. And it made me wonder if you encounter that same feeling in your outreach. Like, do you see the teens and the young adults being visibly inspired by your specific journey?
Oh my gosh. Wow. I mean, I don't know if I'm an inspiration to them or anything, but I will say these kids are profoundly motivated. Okay, something that I'm very excited about was one of my old Lincoln High School teachers. He runs the environmental club at Lincoln High School now, and I got to visit. They held a whole summit that the kids did all the workshops, and they invited experts and scientists to come talk, and they are awesome. They're showing up to rallies outside of City Hall. They're organizing and educating themselves. They are motivated, and I think they also have a very... There is sort of a darkness within Gen Z and I think the younger generation of like, there is this existential threat of climate change that they are very aware of,
right?
At least the ones that have not been radicalized towards the right and are like climate change deniers. And so they are highly motivated and motivated by a lack of time as well. So there is both this like intrinsic great hope, mm-hmm. and I think some... a lot of fear as well of like, if we don't do this now, then we're not ever going to do it, you know?
Right.
So I don't think I've inspired them, but I do think that when they meet me and they see that someone young is in office, they think like, oh, this is a space for me. You right. know, we don't have to, have most of our senators and stuff actually like on the verge of hospitalization and death because they are so old. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. I mean, sure. like, we need to let people retire in this country, you know?
True. Yeah.
In a positive way.
Preach. Those are facts. In order to feel comfortable in my city, with the leadership that I have, I need to see myself reflected back. It cannot be a bunch of 70-year-old white people. I don't feel safe with that. So when you came into office, actually that whole cohort, the whole system, I was so jazzed, electrified. And then to see how it's all shaking out, Portland is happening. Like,
I agree.
There are difficulties like the cities face, but I also feel that we are on the cusp of a golden age in this city. And I think that your council, is really driving that.
I completely agree. I have so many constituent events in district and people always say they feel more represented than they ever have before. I mean, the fact that you have three counselors that are there just for your district, for anything that you want, the fact that there's at least one person on council that you politically align with, you mm-hmm. know, even if other people aren't your flavor of the week, everyone has someone that they feel represented by. And I think it's a really special, magical thing and we should treat that as sacred.
Right. I imagine that there are some high highs and there's some low lows in this journey. And as I'm like kind of reflecting on your career, I think about Joanne Hardesty. I have such tender feelings for Joanne Hardesty. And I was low-key devastated when she lost her seat to Renee Gonzalez. I have such reverence for her. And yes. I know as a woman of color in considerable power, Portland put her through it. Like, ugh, watching that was painful. Oh my gosh. I want to know what your experience was working with Commissioner Hardesty's office, because you were their manager of constituent services and tribal relations. Mm-hmm. What about this experience informed your decision to run for office?
Yeah, I first met Commissioner Hardesty when she was running for office. I was taking a race in Oregon politics class at PSU. Mm-hmm. And she came and spoke to our office when she was running. And I remember at that point, I had zero faith in government. I trusted exactly zero elected officials. I had no interest in anyone who was running for office because I was just like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And all of these people are corrupt and they're always doing some stuff and lying and talking out of both sides of their mouth, you know? And she came to our office and poor Commissioner Hardesty, I grilled her for like a full hour. It was pretty much just me and her going back and forth because the rest of the class was like, okay, they seem like they have their own thing going on. But, you know, I was really asking her about police accountability and climate justice issues and all these things. And she answered so directly and honestly. And I could tell that she really understood all of her values and why she was asking for our support, because she answered so quickly. Like, she had really thought about all of these things for a long time. It came from a place of deep thought and study and principle.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, like, she really stuck in my memory. And when she ended up running and winning, I saw that she had an opening in her office, and I applied to do constituent services work. And that was really the spot where I learned about how government works, what doesn't work. I also realized that people really don't know who to be mad at. They would get mad at the wrong bureau, right, or the wrong city councilor. Like, they don't know who's responsible, so they can't organize effectively. And Commissioner Hardesty is the first Black city councilwoman. I mean, she, as her constituent services person, I answered the phone and the emails. And so, and I was the front desk person when we had Patriot Prayer members try to come to our office and all of those things. So I heard the N-word more times than I ever had in my life. I got horrific death threats on her behalf, and she was sent, you know, manure to her home. Someone tried to come into her office with a gun. The things that she went through were just heinous. And then towards the very end, she was framed by, at the time, the president of the police union for a hit and run that she didn't commit because someone confused her for a different Black woman. So
this is terrorism.
It is terrorism. What she went through was really horrible. And she was the most, under such a high pressure cooker, because you have to remember at that time too, she was one of four counselors, all of whom were more to the right than she was. And so she was very much alone. And the left finally had someone that they were kind of interested in. But because of that, they were like, why aren't you fixing everything? And she was like, I'm just one vote. You know, we have to get three votes to pass anything. And so she was held to this higher expectation from everyone under a huge microscope and pressure cooker on top of all of the violence that she faced. And she was the bravest, slickest motherfucker I've ever met. Say that on air. She was. She. We were always like worried for her safety. We were like, you can't take the bus anymore. You can't take the MAX. It's like too scary. What, something's going to happen to you? And she was like, no one's going to stop me from taking the MAX. I'm not doing that. Like, that's how I get to work. And so
that's my girl. I love her.
Yeah. She's a badass. Yeah. And I think so when I ran for office, I'm not a Black woman. I think that's a whole different subset of unique harm that happens to people in office. If you are a Black representative, I think it's just a different degree and a different flavor. And I didn't expect that I would go through some of that. I've gone through a lot of my own things for sure. And I was mentally ready for them just because I had seen what she went through. So when I decided to run, it was very much not a fun decision. I saw what she went through, and I was like, this seems like a terrible job. But
perfect for me.
Yeah, but sometimes you just gotta be there anyways, so yeah. You do it.
Just based on what you just said, I imagine, and I had imagined already, that you were already going to be considering ageism, that you would be facing racism, obviously, but also the xenophobia. But I might be projecting. But I don't think I am, because of what you just said.
No, I knew.
Those things said, what have been the most challenging roadblocks that you've faced on this journey?
I mean, I think I definitely did get death threats and all of those things and needed security adjusted for a while. I talked to the security team. I think they told me I get more threats than the mayor does, which is really funny.
That's kind of like, I mean, I don't, I'm going to have to bleep myself for saying this, but that's kind of cunt.
I agree. I'm like, okay, I think they know who's in charge. yeah. So, you know, there's definitely sexism, ageism, racism. I think for a while there, some of my colleagues didn't take me seriously until I kept passing policies. And then they were like, oh, maybe we should listen to her or work with her or something. And, you know, we definitely get a lot of like white supremacist hate mail telling me to go back to my country and all that sort of thing. But I knew that was all coming and I was prepared for it. So it's not too bad on that end. I actually think the hardest thing is when you have disagreements with people that you are very much aligned with who don't understand the limitations of the bureaucracy that you're in. Because to me, that's really heartbreaking when you're like, no, I'm on your side, but I have limited tools at my disposal within this role. And so that to me is more painful because there are definitely people that I'm like, we're never going to be values aligned, so I'm not worried about you.
Right. They're not paying your bills, don't pay them no mind, kind of that energy, like, you're you know who you represent, and you know who would rather not be represented by you, but what does that even matter? Like, you're in a position of power, and you are in these streets doing these things, and you're doing them for everybody.
Yeah, and sometimes, surprisingly, though, I think the socialists on council have been really interested in, like, doing oversight on budget and missing money and all of that. And so there has been a weird overlap where I've seen that some conservatives are like, oh, I actually kind of like that they're doing fiscal responsibility, but what they don't understand is we're doing sewer socialism, right? So I have had some conservatives also tell me, they're like, I hate you and everything you stand for, but I'm going to vote for you because you say, I can tell that you're going to tell me the truth of what you actually think it's going to be. So I'm going to vote for you. And I'm always like, thank you. I think it's a huge honor. If someone hates you and they still are like, but I trust you. I was like, okay.
True. That's an ally. That's a true ally.
Yeah.
Unreal. So if you take a step back and look at your life objectively, do you feel like a success? I guess the better question is, like, what are your personal metrics for success?
That's such a hard question. I think that I will feel really successful when, regardless of if it's in this job or somewhere else, we've done a significant amount to impact like poverty and wealth inequality, at least within the city of Portland, if that's my role, because it's really devastating what's happened to the city over the past few years and to the country overall, how bad the wealth inequality is now and how many people are suffering from homelessness. And I was homeless as well. And so I think that's an issue that I really, really care about. And I think in some ways I have achieved the American dream, right? We were immigrants. I was raised by a single mother. We went to school. We did all the things. My sister is also doing great. She has a master's degree, is working on her PhD. I'm in government office. It's sort of like the melting pot American dream of, okay, you had immigrants. They came in, they brought new ideas, and now they're here, like, working together to make everything better.
Yeah.
I've never really aspired to political office or to climb that ladder necessarily. So I will go where I'm useful if I think that I'm useful in a place. And I feel successful insofar as I do feel very loved and cared for by my constituents. And I think that that comes from them knowing that I'm fighting for them because they can feel that I've been through those things too. And so there's like a different intimacy to that when you come to the work from that lived experience. And I mean, I've cried with people, you know.
Really?
So I went to an event for Electrify Portland. And a young immigrant woman came up to me. She ran up to me and she was like, sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. You look like you're busy, but I just wanted to tell you. And she told me her background and everything she had gone through. And it was very similar to mine. And she had also been homeless. And we literally just started crying in the middle of this conference together and hugged. And I think that is, to me, the measure of success. Like, when you get to have those moments with people and to know and love your neighbors like that, I think that is success.
That's beautiful. That is the thesis of this entire program. Like, thinking outside of the monetary ideals of success, like, to find success with your constituents, the way you put that is poetic. It's like, if this was a written article, that would be the pull quote.
It's very special to me. So, I feel lucky.
Yeah, I think I'm looking, like, hearing you say that, I'm like, dang, how lucky. What a lucky moment to share with someone. And to be able to impact lives like that, this is also my metric for success, is to, like, have a conversation with someone and know that you don't know them, they don't know you, but you're still able to experience this intimacy, this closeness, just based on the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Preach. It's wonderful. That's holy. It's divine. It feels divine.
It is.
Right? Okay, past, present. Who do you look up to? Who are your role models?
Oh my gosh. So many people, honestly. The first people that came to mind that I'm thinking of right now are the folks that run the Right to Dream encampments in Portland.
That's a good one, yeah.
I've known some of those folks for a few years, and it's so funny having known them before and now getting to be in office. Like, we were able to secure funding for them to have porta potties for the year, which is not even that grand, but it's like a good thing that they just needed and asked for.
Yeah.
And to have the power to now be able to do that and to influence that, I think feels really good. But they are so special because, for folks who don't know, Right to Dream was an encampment that was set up on Burnside, and it's long since been moved to the other side of the river now, but it was a group of kind of like anarchist unhoused neighbors who said, okay, the city is not providing an adequate space for us to be. We're going to just set this up and like claim this space. And then the owner of that parking lot ended up giving it to them for $1 so that they could set up more like permanent tiny home shelters. Mm-hmm. And people there, it's a more autonomous shelter model. People take care of one another. They have roles, they have responsibilities, and they are just given the autonomy to be a human being in that system while they're trying to navigate getting back into housing.
Right.
And I have a lot of deep respect for those people and how they negotiate and work on things together with really nothing at their disposal. And they keep showing up. So I have a lot of respect for them. I could go on and on. There are fantastic climate advocates in the city who are fighting to protect us from the CEI hub, from the Zenith oil train there. And they are relentless. I've met some of these elders who have been fighting for 40, 50 years, and they're still trying. And they also feel hope that they're meeting me, and I'm a different generation, and I'm also going to pick up their fight and take on that mantle when necessary. I would say Commissioner Hardesty is one of my inspirations. I would say my colleagues on council right now are really lovely, and I think some of them are really trying to represent people that have never been represented before. So I could go on and on. I have a lot of people. Sorry. You can pick and choose if you have to clip this.
What do you think? You think that you're in Portland for the long haul, or do you have political aspirations that stretch beyond Multnomah County?
Oh, gosh. I feel so lucky and honored that people entrusted me to set up this new form of government and take care of Portland. And I always joke, but I feel probably the way that like Batman feels about Gotham, about Portland, or like Superman with Metropolis. Like, I'm going to protect this city. And especially with the Trump administration and like all the past years where we had the Proud Boys and white supremacists and all this stuff marching the streets, I just feel like Portland is a very shiny glimmer of hope. And so I feel very protective of it. Mm-hmm. And I love Oregon as a whole. I don't think I'll ever leave Oregon. It's just such a special place to me. I know everyone's trying to get me to run for Congress now. It feels like the second that you get one thing, then people are like, and then when are you going to the next thing?
Yeah.
But I'm honored that they asked me that, but I'm focused on Portland right now, and I'm very happy and honored to be here.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Councilwoman Angelita Murillo. Learn more at angelitaforportland.com. Don't forget to follow Success Stories PDX on socials and learn more about me at briannawheeler.com. I'll talk at you next week. And until then, remember, success is what we make it.